This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the American Monetary Association's podcast, where we explore how monetary policy impacts the real lives of real people and the action steps necessary to preserve wealth and enhance one's lifestyle.
Welcome to the show. This is Jason Hartman, your host, and every 10th episode, we do something kind of special, kind of different. What we do is we go off topic. So regardless of which show it is on the Hartman Media Network, whether it be one of the financial shows, economics, real estate investing, travel, longevity, all of the other topics that we have, every 10th episode, we go off topic and we explore something of general interest, something of general life success value. And so many of our listeners around the world in 164 countries have absolutely loved our 10th episode shows. So that's what we're going to do today. And let's go ahead and get to our guest with a special 10th episode show. And of course, on the next episode, we'll be back to our regular programming. Here we go. Hey, it's my pleasure to welcome Jeffrey Gittimer to the show. He is an internationally acclaimed sales, customer loyalty, and personal development speaker, and he is the New York Times bestselling author of The Little Red Book of Selling, 12.5 Principles of Sales Greatness, as well as many other books. But his latest book is fantastic. It's entitled Truthful Living, The First Writings of Napoleon Hill. We are going to dive into that mostly, but we'll touch on all of his other work as well. Jeffrey, welcome. How are you?
Thank you. I'm very fine, and Thanksgiving is over. I did not have a traditional Thanksgiving this year for the first time in a long time because I needed some airline miles. We flew to Fiji, and the people are very friendly, but when you say Happy Thanksgiving on Thanksgiving, they go, what?
Yeah. What is that exactly? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I was in Fiji about 2 years ago, and nice place, but I don't think you need to go that far for the same kind of environment. You know, you can do that in Hawaii.
Right, but you may not make executive platinum on American Airlines, so you had to fly another 10,000 miles in order to make that happen.
It's funny you talk about that. My girlfriend is trying to spend another $1,500 with American before the end of the year. These frequent flyer programs really sort of make for funny motivations. They really do.
I'll tell you, though, when you reach that highest level, it's a whole different environment of flying.
Sure.
Upgrades are easier. It's more comfortable.
Yeah.
And I've been doing it for 20-something years, so.
No question about it. Well, anything to make air travel more comfortable because it pretty much stinks nowadays most of the time.
No, exactly. So, you know, 1,000%, they don't care.
Yeah. No, they don't.
They literally do not care.
Yeah. They do not. They actually, in many of these airlines, have contempt for their customers, I find, especially the older, more established airlines, like, I hate to say it, but American. Maybe you can talk about that, because you're an expert on this topic. And
I am an expert.
Loyalty.
I think that if you just understand their slogan, you'll understand their whole philosophy.
Mm-hmm. What is that?
Their slogan is, we're not satisfied until you're not satisfied.
I love it.
Once you understand that, then you understand the airline business at its core.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a sad truth. It really is a sad truth, no question.
Their CEO came on the air the other day. The guy's so out of touch.
Yeah.
You know, on-time departure, that's an expected thing.
Mm-hmm.
Customer service is something that a weary traveler literally depends on someone friendly to welcome them into the airplane.
Right.
And, you know, here, have some unedible food and some undrinkable coffee.
Yeah. Well, you know, it is cheap, though, I got to tell you. I mean, if you compare it to when I was a kid, and my mom would send me across the country from L.A. to New York, it would be $500. And if you adjust that for inflation, that's about $1,700 today. So for better or worse, I mean, it's the Greyhound bus in the sky, you know.
And that's how I look at it. I get on the bus, I try to sell a book to the guy next to me for cash, and then I put my hood up and I go to work.
You're a funny guy. Well, hey, tell us about your latest book, Truthful Living. You know, Napoleon Hill is one of the, obviously, the classics. He is one of the founders of the personal development movement. And before we dive into Truthful Living, Jeffrey, I'll just say something that might tee it up a little bit. You know, when I was 17 years old, I discovered four great mentors, Zig Ziglar, Earl Nightingale, Dennis Waitley, and Jim Rohn, and they changed my life. They absolutely changed my life. I discovered your work much later, and it was very helpful to me, especially the Little Red Book of Selling. But it seems that nowadays, all of the writing, and when I say all of it, of course, it's a figure of speech, but the writing, the thought leadership, the how-to movement is always about this more technical stuff. It's about how to do this, how to do that. And we're missing the philosophical.
And it's data-driven, not empathy-driven. There's no emotion to it.
Good way to look at it. We're missing the philosophical underpinnings and the ethics that really are defining, aren't they?
Well, if you don't think ethics are defining, give a call over to Wells Fargo.
Yes.
You know, they set sales ethics back 100 years.
Oh, they did. They did. Wells Fargo is, we've reported many times on, they have a scandal every week, it seems, and that company is just absolutely disgusting. They're the most hated big bank in America right now. But they changed places. It used to be Chase and B of A, so, you know.
Yeah. That's all. But the challenge to do the right thing in our society has never been at a higher level. In business, you're literally documented by the moment, mm-hmm. whether it's Yelp or Google or TripAdvisor or any sort of reporting agency within a framework of a genre. Everyone has their what's happening now,
right?
Their Facebook Live and all the things that they can do in 2 seconds. And you have no choice.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be above board or the world finds out in 3 seconds.
Okay, so I'm so glad you brought that up. Now, this might be counterintuitive or there's some unintended consequence here or something, but I would think in a world where you have things like Yelp, where anybody mm-hmm. can go online and say anything, and a lot of it's not fair because a lot of the reviews are obviously written by competitors, but in that kind of world, it seems like everybody would be tiptoeing on eggshells, yet I find many times they don't care. It's just like, we'll just move on to the next customer. You're disposable.
Well, no, there's a reason.
Yeah.
They don't have the keys. The owner or the corporate CEO, they care about that. That's mm-hmm. their future. But the low-level employee who they're underpaying and undertraining
mm-hmm.
doesn't really have the same level of care because
mm-hmm.
they know they can go someplace else in a hot economy and find a better job for a couple more bucks an hour.
Right. That's true.
But why should they?
I agree with you. But what about the person who is the owner? I find that the owner of maybe a little ad agency or a marketing firm or a law firm or a realtor or a mortgage person, they don't seem to care. I mean, it kind of blows my mind.
There could be a reason for that. And I'm not going to say it's for everybody, but mm-hmm. I'm just going to say that the person who doesn't really care doesn't really understand social media.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the correlation between the jackass and the person who only has 19 Twitter followers, you'll find that they're pretty much the same person.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't realize that someone, if you walk into my room and you want to sell me $1 million property,
mm-hmm.
the first thing I'm going to do is Google you.
Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely. So it would seem that people would be more careful, that they would care more, that they would
Whether Hartman had two N's or one N in it. And you're the number one person in Google, by the way. I don't know whether you're aware of it or not.
Yeah, so it would seem like people would be more ethical than ever right now, right? But that's not the case.
I think that their times are limited. I think that if you are not an ethical person, the world finds out about it very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It's like being a shitty restaurant in New York City. You're not going to last.
Yeah, that's true. Let's look at some of these lessons in the book. You've really outlined this nicely. Lesson number two is what my mom taught me all the time growing up. You know, Jason, finish what you start. That was like the mantra. And
that's so interesting.
And so it's there. But, you know, how to think, imagination, the value of self-confidence and sincerity. There's so much here.
Each chapter was a lesson that followed a sales lesson in Napoleon Hill's first teachings, where he taught a bunch of young people how to sell advertising.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of each lesson, he knew intuitively that the only way he was going to get them to be a great salesperson was to be a great person.
Mm-hmm.
And so he went into the foundational elements of their professional life and said, listen, you have to believe in yourself. You have to have the self-confidence. You have to have ethical standards. You have to have goals. You have to have a service heart. And he would write about these things after each lesson. And when I was given the honor of doing the editing and the annotating of this, I took away the sales things. And I just focused on what was to become 20 years later, Think and Grow Rich. And when you, you know, all of your mentors, Jim Rohn's and Zig Ziglar's and Earl Nightingale and Dennis Whately, of whom were my mentors, and right. most of whom I knew very personally, mm-hmm. these were people who read Napoleon Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Every yeah. single, if you ask
they,
them.
They all credit Napoleon Hill. I mean, certainly Earl Nightingale does the most. Yeah. We become what we think about, right?
Exactly. Totally, exactly. And if you look at it from the perspective of, you can learn something brand new by reading something 100 years old, this is what they need to do.
Yeah.
Just go back and look at the foundational elements of anything that's written in this book, and you will find not only are there lessons that you can use immediately, but there are things to implement immediately and secrets that you weren't thinking about. So mm-hmm. I'm going to give you an example.
Okay.
There's a thing in lesson number 21, and there's only 23 lessons in the book, called the 5-point rule.
Okay.
I'm going to read a little bit without glasses. Success may be had by those who are willing to pay the price, and most of those who crave a $10,000 a year position, now $250,000 a year.
Adjust for inflation, obviously.
Adjust for inflation, right. Especially if they're engaged in business, may realize it if they will pay the price. And the price is eternal vigilance in the development of self-confidence, enthusiasm, working with a chief aim, performing more service than you're paid for, and concentration. With these qualities well developed, you will be sure to succeed. And let's name these qualities the 5-point rule. Now, what Hill was saying here is you can't just be enthusiastic and not have a service heart.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a goal, even if you're a great server. You have to have enthusiasm. But here's the deal. Concentration at the end is the new, is the old world that now means focus.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't succeed well unless you put all of those 5 things together.
Mm-hmm.
Once you put them together, now you have unstoppable success power.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the value of this book is. Off the chart. My fiance, who was editing the book at the time, would be texting me at 11 o'clock at night as she's editing, going, "You got to see this. You got to see this." She's like texting me whole passages.
Right,
but,
right.
But that's the value of this book that will, it will last for generations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fantastic. So in other words, what you're saying about the enthusiasm point is the enthusiasm needs to be directed, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
That's
right.
Correct. If you have enthusiasm about your goal, mm-hmm. if you have enthusiasm about having a service heart, if you have ultimate enthusiasm, which means I'm focused in on who I am now and how happy I am and who I want to become, what Napoleon Hill is saying is when you combine these pieces and you take the inner self, the enthusiastic self, and you focus in on it, you will then become better directed, more productive, and more valuable to anybody that you come in contact with.
And I think enthusiasm, the root of that word actually means God within us or something
right.
like that.
Yeah, yeah. It's Earl Nightingale. There's a series of Earl Nightingale tapes in the old days. I had them called Direct Line.
Uh-huh. Oh, I love Direct Line. I had the whole library. I bought it from Nightingale Conant. Yeah,
exactly. They were unbelievable because they were so
great.
Full of information.
Oh, it was incredible.
That
it was incredible.
Go 5 minutes and go, wait. I was focused on another thought. I got to go back.
Yeah, I got to back that up and hear it again. Well, you know, I remember I used to listen to Direct Line over and over, and I loved that. I loved that series. Of course, Lead the Field was, you know, great. And my favorite was Earl Nightingale's Greatest Discovery. That was sort of his last work, I believe,
mm-hmm.
Before he passed away in, I believe, March 25th, 1989, if I'm not mistaken. Because I do remember that day. On Direct Line, Jeffrey, I wish someone would update Direct Line. Wouldn't that be great if it was modern and had all the modern examples, you know?
Actually, you don't. I find when I read and listen to those things, I don't need the modern examples, maybe because I knew them back mm-hmm. then.
Well, the references, at least.
Yeah.
The references he makes to, you know, things like Manus. I don't know what that is. I think it's an old magazine or something.
Yeah. But it makes you think, and it makes you look stuff up, and you can Google anything on your phone at the time that it happens.
Right.
But the characterization of his voice, his tone,
mm-hmm.
his deep belief in
Beautiful.
What he's doing. Yeah. There's a great story in an old tape of his that I have someplace where he wanted to be a radio announcer in Chicago when he just got out of the Army. He was in this little small station in Phoenix, and somebody said, why do you read with such enthusiasm? Why do you read with such character? Why do you read? What are you doing this for?
He said he would read it like it was a Jell-O commercial on the Jack Benny show.
Yeah. But he said, and I would just smile and go about my business.
Right. Exactly.
There's no reason to explain that to somebody. If you have to explain it, you're doing the wrong thing.
He made the point of like the 60s generation, you know, why knock yourself out? Take it easy.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of attitude. And he was really way beyond his time in terms of, I mean, now success thinking has developed so much with, you know, your work and many others, of course.
Oh, sure.
So it's all there. But sadly, like we were saying at the beginning, Jeffrey, we've lost the underpinnings. No one's talking about this stuff anymore. They're just talking about how to do this, you know, how to do social media, how to make great videos,
right.
You know, how to whatever.
Success on LinkedIn.
Yeah, exactly.
But it doesn't give you anything foundational. This is pretty interesting. I used to subscribe to the New Yorker magazine before it became too political.
Mm-hmm.
And I cut out a cartoon about 20 years ago. It's a dog on a keyboard turning around to his master and saying, when you're on the internet, no one knows you're a dog.
Right. Yeah, that's a great
one. That's the challenge that you have today. You need to be able to be a person and have a personality, not simply an internet reputation.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. Well, one of your lessons in here is about the 7 success rules, lesson number 9. Can you tell us about those?
Yes, I can. Self-denial is not like sexual abstention. It is stay away from stupid things. And stupid things. The 5th is you have to own willpower. And the 6th is you have to be unselfish. And the 7th is you concentrate all your efforts in all your work. In other words, go for it 1,000%. You don't go to the ocean and put a toe in the water, learn how to swim. A, you get lessons from the best guy on the planet. B, you have the right equipment. C, you jump in the water and when it's, you know, somewhat tepid. And you swim your ass off.
It's sink or swim, right? The old saying.
It is sink or swim all the way. But the challenge is most people are not prepared to swim.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens in this book is a preparation guide. It's telling you all of the fundamental things you have to do as a person so you can be the best whatever you want to be. Mm-hmm. And if you listen to the late, great Jim Rohn, he goes, you know, if you want to be a great doctor, you got to study medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, backtrack that. If you want to be a great dad, you got to be a great person. If you want to be a great mom, you got to be a great person. If you want to be a great writer, you got to be a great person. And all of these things focus in on who you are as a human being. It's so fundamental and so overlooked that it's scary.
It is scary how overlooked it is today in our I'll just call it our how-to culture.
Mm-hmm.
So very true. Jeffrey, any final points you want to make about this? I just want to ask you before we go, though, a little bit about selling, because that book was so renowned.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's 12.5 things in there, right?
Oh, yeah. And I'll tell you, I was given the idea by my publisher, Ray Bard from Bard Press, one of the 3 or 4 honest people in the publishing industry. And when he gave me the idea, we were sitting at a Mexican restaurant in Austin. And I immediately wrote, kick your own ass. On a napkin, I wrote out half the table of contents.
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew that it had to be about networking. I knew it had to be about asking questions. I knew it had to be about why people buy. And I knew the last chapter of the book was going to be resign your position as general manager of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
So I was telling the salesperson, concentrate on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Concentrate on your, you know, if your closet's dirty, don't tell me my closet's dirty.
Mm-hmm.
I created a new euphemism that people who live in tin houses shouldn't throw can openers.
Not the glass house one.
Exactly.
Like yours better. That's
exactly.
A more modern version.
But
great.
The challenge for this book is it's real. All I did was write about real sales that I made myself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people go, well, how'd you get to be such a great? Because I made freaking sales.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a salesman. Yeah. If you ask me one of my titles, I would have to say salesman. And salesman in New York City, where everyone wants a bribe. People are pushing you out of the way. If you're 5 minutes late, you're dead. It's raining. It's snowing. The subway's down. Whatever happens to you happens in Manhattan.
Right.
Persona.
Yeah. Very, very interesting. You know, remember going back to Earl Nightingale, he used to always talk about William James' famous quote, nothing happens until somebody sells something.
Right.
And, you know, even if you think you're not in sales, you are in sales. Every human being on earth is in sales. Our pets are in sales. They're selling us on it's time to feed them or walk them or whatever, right?
However, as a salesperson, you're also in service and you're also in attitude. And if you have the right service heart and the right attitude heart, sales are going to be a hell of a lot easier because you're going to make friends. And all things being equal, people want to do business with their friends. And all things being not quite so equal, people still want to do business with their friends. Just look at the rapport that we've gained. We don't know each other from Adam's house cat. Now, we knew of each other just by reputation.
Right.
But the bottom line is we have connected today in a way where we could be a friend forever.
I agree. Yeah, your work is awesome. And your points are very well taken, too. And it was fun spending 3 minutes joking around with you a little bit before we started.
Yeah, I agree.
You have a great presence. So very, very nice. You know, in this book, I'm looking at the contents. You know, you talk about differentiation. Mm-hmm. You talk about networking, getting in front of the real decision maker. Now, it depends what you're selling, right? But there's so many important principles in here. Any particular you want to point out as we wrap it up?
In the real world of selling, to me, this is just so interesting. There's no such thing as a complex sale if you have a relationship with the CEO. Complexity melts away when the CEO calls down to the IT department or to the purchasing department and says, hey, we're doing business with Gittimer. And then the marketing guy goes, Gittimer, boss? Okay, boss. And that's it.
Yeah.
The complexity is over. And so I'm about a relationship. I'm a relationship person. I'm going to provide that CEO with information about the things that he or she cares about. How to make a profit. How to keep customers loyal. How to keep employees loyal. How to have great morale. Those are things that CEOs focus on every day, not how to buy a copy machine or to get a new whatever the hell it is that they're looking at. The CEO can pass that information down and say, look, this guy makes sense. We're doing business.
In other words, you took or take as a salesperson a holistic approach to that customer. And that is so incredibly valuable. You know, I hate to almost reference it again, but Earl Nightingale, you, Jeffrey, are the person on the white horse.
Yeah.
Nightingale talked about.
I studied Earl. I loved his voice. I loved his message. He's arguably the most intellectual person ever in foundational personal development because he went out and did massive research on everything he could find. Literally, I've seen his library. It's scary. All of the people who preceded him used their own frames of reference.
Right.
Although I will tell you, and this is potentially for a reader's secret, there's a part. When I got the original documents from the Napoleon Hill Foundation to write Truthful Living or to annotate Truthful Living, in the back, Napoleon Hill made a list of books you ought to read. This is where he got his information. This is where he developed.
Let me guess. In there, we've got James Allen, As a Man Thinketh. I bet that one's in there, right?
Orison Swett Marden. He literally goes through the whole process. The guys who created Sears and Roebuck had a book that he just devoured everything he could find. And even though a lot of it was religious, he made it pretty much agnostic. And, you know, to his credit, he didn't give a lot of people reference because he changed so much of it. Like he used it as a thought process rather than plagiaristic.
Right. It wasn't a bunch of footnotes.
No.
It was he's going to internalize the information and then share it back in a new and different way.
Literally, there's no footnotes.
But very
good. But the challenge is this. When Earl did his research, he accredited everybody. You know, he would tell you exactly who said what and what he thought it meant. And that's why it's so fascinating to listen to whatever it is that he's got to say. And I still, it's on one of my eBay searches, anything signed by Earl Nightingale, I'll buy it. I want to be in context with it. I want to feel the heat. I want to feel the magic when I'm reading it.
That's great. You know, it is one of the things I'm constantly saying, Jeffrey, on my podcast, and I don't know if this will resonate with you or not, but we've talked a lot about these old motivational speakers or personal development speakers and thought leaders, right? One of the things I say, and I say this some rather cynically, by the way, I'm not always positive, for sure, is it's very important that we all watch old movies and old TV shows. because so many people nowadays just have no frame of reference for how life used to be. They just don't know what the world used to be like. I always kind of say, I mirror something my mother says, you know, I was born too late. As much as I love today's world and the technology, and I just love this stuff.
Yeah.
But as far as the culture and the people, I think it used to be better. I don't know. I hate to be so nostalgic about
it. It was certainly safer. There was certainly less responsibility attached to it. It was a simpler time. There was only three channels on your television set.
And
the challenge is to take advantage of the technology that exists so that you can succeed to a greater level. Yes, the 50s and the 60s were amazing times, but it ain't the 50s and 60s anymore. Candy bars are no longer a nickel. They're $1.49 at the airport plus tax. And you have to deal with that. I would love to hang out with you for a weekend anywhere and just talk about the way it used to be. We could probably put a book together about it ain't the way it used to be.
That's a good title.
It is. But more important is your philosophy of understanding how it was in order to really capture what is. And that's where people are missing the boat. They're just trying to capture what is without a full understanding or a full meaning of the way it was.
I
totally applaud you for that.
Yeah. They're just looking for the content, but they don't have the context of it.
Exactly.
And that's so critically important.
I've told people for years, if you want to learn something new, just read a book that's 60 years old.
Exactly. Very
all the ideas.
Good.
All the ideas are there. So this is a great interview and I totally appreciate it. I totally appreciate your time. I totally appreciate your expertise. And you'll be a Floridian soon. We'll be down there. I know your number. I'll buzz you.
Good stuff. Jeffrey, give out your website and tell people where they can find you.
Gitomer.com, Gitomer.com, or go to Amazon, type in the word Gitomer, Gitomer. You'll have all you need to know.
Excellent. Jeffrey Gitomer, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, HartmanMedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.